from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in the hour ahead, we'll talk with jazz bassist and composer Marcus Shelby. You're hearing his music here. It's the Marcus Shelby Jazz Orchestra playing Moton Swing. He grew up in Sacramento, and despite the lure of a promising New York jazz career and a Columbia Records deal, he made his home in San Francisco. And he's been a central figure in the Bay Area's blues and jazz scene, especially known for his trio of big band suites, which are steeped in his deep research of African-American history. On Friday, his 16-piece band, the Marcus Shelby Orchestra, will be celebrating the legacy of Duke Ellington, born 115 years ago this week, with a tribute concert at Zellerbach Hall at UC Berkeley. We'll talk with Marcus Shelby about his music, his career, and the enormous influence and talent of jazz legend Duke Ellington. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. Award-winning Bay Area jazz bassist, composer, and arranger Marcus Shelby joins us in studio for this Forum Hour. A member of the San Francisco Arts Commission and a faculty member at San Francisco State and UC Berkeley's Young Musicians Program, he's presently celebrating the legacy of Duke Ellington with his 16-piece Marcus Shelby Orchestra. The legacy of Duke, 50 years of swing, is being performed at Zellerbach Hall at UC Berkeley, and we welcome Marcus Shelby back. It's been 14 years, but delighted to have him back with us in studio here. Good to see you.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Let's talk about the Duke first
and get
underway here. I mean, it's been a long time since we last talked about Duke Ellington.
Yeah.
But is he being reassessed by you in this kind of milestone, 115 years? Or?
Well, I think that you always learn new information about a historical figure like that as information becomes available. It's the same with other figures that I've been trying to learn about, whether it's Harriet Tubman, Dr. Martin Luther King, or in this case, Duke Ellington. 14 years ago when we met, I mean, we had Orrin Keep News and the great writer Phil Elwood, and that was really at the beginning of me starting my band. My band's been around for 15 years now, my big band. Started out of the inspiration of Duke Ellington and his music and a desire to learn that music and a desire to write music based on that model and that format. And so fast forward 14 years, there's a lot that has been discovered individually. And in some ways, you know, you try to move on. You don't want to copy someone, and you not that Duke can be copied, but you certainly want to find your own voice. So if there's been any reassessment, it's only been how I've been able to take that model and move forward with the ideas that I have with today's realities, today's social struggles. And in many ways, do what Duke Ellington did with his music is was to highlight his community, highlight history, highlight social progress, and create music that showed us what a beautiful future could actually hold.
Well, you've just kind of in a wonderfully encapsulated way given a great deal of revelation about your career and what it's been moving forward. You not only have a 16-piece orchestra, you've got the seven-host group, you've got the quintet, you've got a trio, and you've really made your mark here in the Bay Area. And I want to talk about how you evolved and all that. But here you've been steeped in Ellington. We're going to hear some music in just a moment. We're going to hear some of Such Sweet Thunder. But also, a lot of traditional musicians. I know you were tremendously influenced by Wynton Marsalis, but also Charles Mingus and Billy Strayhorn, Count Basie. There's that side of you, and then there's this other side of you that's absolutely original, I mean, in terms of compositions and so forth. So you've been doing both, along with all this research into historical African-American history and figures like you said, Harriet Tubman, and getting into Port Chicago, all of these kinds of things, and really being inspired by history to do original compositions. I mean, that's been sort of steadfast in your career, hasn't it?
It certainly has. My mom early on told me about taught me the importance of history. And
she gave you a book on Tubman as a kid,
right? She gave me a book on Harriet Tubman when I was 8 or 9. And I didn't really understand the significance then. As I got older, I began to see how things work together and how people evolved over time. But history is something that I really just personally love. I outside of music, I love learning about what happened and how it happened and how people came together and whatever it took to make progress. And when you have to create music, you have to learn about it. You have to go through whatever it takes, whether it's going through a residency, whether it's physically traveling to a place, whether it's buying books, whether it's attending conferences, all of those things I try to build around a project. If I want to learn about the civil rights movement, or if I want to learn about Harriet Tubman, or if I want to learn about the history of San Francisco, which was a project I did 2 years ago. And that just enlivens all the things that I enjoy about life, whether it's history, politics, music, sociology. And so those require that sort of journey. And they also open up other ideas. They also connect you to other people. They also make you reassess how you've been doing things. It also helps impact the things that you do in life, whether it's teach. Right now I'm on the San Francisco Arts Commission. You bring that knowledge to the table.
Teaching at Juvie Hall, too, aren't you still?
Through the Yerba Buena Gardens Festival, we have been fortunate enough to take our work into the juvenile detention center and work with those young people, providing them opportunities to be expressive, to learn about music, to express their whatever is going on, and try to build something beautiful as opposed to involving things that are tearing things down. And so we've been doing that over at the Woodside location, and we have more planned over the next year. Again, thanks to the Yerba Buena Gardens Festival that has been supporting this work.
I think it's great the way you just immerse yourself and do all this research, and then it's turned into melody and action and movement and rhythms and all of that. I mean, just a creative process. I think there may be a book there, but I want to get people to hear some of the music that we're talking about here. I've been talking about this tribute to Duke Ellington that's going on over at Zellerbach with Marcus Shelby's orchestra, with his jazz orchestra. Let's hear actually an Ellington cut. This will be, you can hear this on Friday. It's called Up and Down. And
I wanted to mention one thing, was that that's in collaboration with Cal Shakes as well. But once Strayhorn and Ellington, they made a pact. I think it was like, must have been the late 50s, that everything they did would now save Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn. So when you start looking at Such Sweet Thunder, you look at Nutcracker Suite, Far East Suite, all of those suite, the Queen Suite, all those that came late 50s and on, it has both of their names on it. That's where the whodunit comes in sometimes.
You also mentioned, though, Cal Shakes, and I thought maybe we could hear something else. This is Duke Ellington from Such Sweet Thunder. Danny, this cut number two, I want to hear this because this is Star-Crossed Lovers and Romeo and Juliet. That's, again, the Marcus Shelby Jazz Orchestra, and 15 of the 16 pieces I think you're hearing now. This is a jazz orchestra with trumpets and trombones and clarinets and flute, piano, drums, and now a guitar player.
Yeah. I just added a guitar player over the summer. Her name is Isla Cantor, someone who I've been playing with off and on for 10 years. A lot of times I choose a musician by their, not necessarily their instrument, although you can't just have a whole bunch of sax players. Yeah, but I'll choose them by their character and their personality, and particularly someone who might bring that to the table. And so,
of course, I was heralding you, and that was Duke Ellington we were hearing.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was like, I was going to correct you on that. No. That's Duke Ellington's, the Duke Ellington Orchestra from the Such Sweet Thunder record, which doesn't use guitar on any of that. But I added guitar because I wanted that character in our band.
Talk about the Shakespeare stuff. I mean, how'd you get linked up with that?
Well, when you study Duke Ellington, eventually you come across all the suites. You know, we're talking about someone who had a 50-year career, 1924 to 19.
Over 1,000 original compositions.
Yeah. So when you take that journey from the Cotton Club era all the way up into the late 70s when he was finishing his last sacred suites and was working on his opera, Queenie Pie, you have to go through all the suites. So eventually you come to Such Sweet Thunder. And I have a very good friend named Val Hendrickson, who's a director. We've worked together. He's an expert on Shakespeare. We've done King Lear together. But we had always been talking about this idea of Such Sweet Thunder and Shakespeare and the relationship and how that can be done in a concert setting. So this was an idea that we have been discussing for almost 10 years. That's how I came across this idea here and working with Cal Shakes, using the music that Duke Ellington wrote and then connecting it to where Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn had connected it to Shakespeare's work. So we're talking about Othello. We're talking about Midsummer Night's Dream. We're talking about four different sonnets. We're talking about Cleopatra, and there's all these things. And it's not music about the play. They're music about moments in the play, character moments, a time that is an impression, if you will. Not necessarily music about Othello, because the music is not about Othello. It does not have that tension that exists in Othello, but it has the sort of character that Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn were inspired by to create these moments in time in the music. And so you have this organized in this sort of impressionistic suite. And that's what you're going to see, and that's what we're going to do on Friday with Cal Shakes.
We want to hear actually another cut from that, but I ought to mention, give you some literary props here, because it's not only, I mean, you've done a lot of theatrical scoring. You mentioned King Lear and so forth, but also Sonny's Blues, which is one of my favorite stories of all time.
Ralph Ellison.
James Baldwin, but then you
did, James Baldwin.
But you did a film on Ellison. You did his story of the King of the Bingo Game, and so there's I just want to say something else about your work. I mean, Marcus Shelby's work is, the range of it is amazing. California Gold Rush and Ohlone Indians and Grizzly Bears. I mean, John Muir, he gets onto something and he just produces it. I mean, he's inspired by history, he's inspired by theater and literature, and we're just very fortunate to have you. We also got another cut. This is from Such Sweet Thunder. This is Duke Ellington.
Yes.
Well, that's Duke Ellington and the connection to Shakespeare that we heard from Marcus Shelby.
I might also add
that's a 1957 album, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Billy Strayhorn. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to add that, like in much of Duke Ellington's work, like a piece like this is informed by the blues. Like a piece, even this is a blues in G. And so much of Ellington's music is based on the foundation of American music, which comes out of the blues tradition, meaning field cries, work songs, blues hollers, field shouts, spirituals that evolved to all the different various American forms of music that we listen to today, rock and roll, hip hop and soul, funk, country western all the way up.
All connected.
All connected.
All related.
And that, but see, that's where I found the importance of Duke Ellington, because he elevated that what was considered, you know, common nonsensical, guttural, and even illiterate forms, now informs all the music that we listen to in this country at the highest levels. And Duke Ellington, not being the first or the only, did it in such a consistent way for 50 years, in such a elevated way, through suites and operas and ballets and tone poems and film scores. And so that's one of the things about Duke Ellington that's important, I believe, is that consistency for 50 years and the organization that involved songwriters and great musicians like Lawrence Brown and Johnny Hodges and Harry Carney, and the musicians that stayed with him for 20, 30, or like Harry Carney, 47 years. That's part of the Ellington genius and the magic.
And the legacy.
And the legacy.
Yeah. We're talking with Marcus Shelby, and I'm going to give an opportunity for listeners to join us shortly. I thought we'd hear some more music, but before we do, boy, it's lucky that you chose to play the bass as opposed to being an usher. I don't want to be esoteric here, but your mother gave you a choice, right? Either play the bass or be an usher.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember that.
Our good fortune, you made the right choice. Then you were born in Memphis and came here to Sacramento as a kid, yeah?
Actually, I was born in Alaska.
Oh, really?
Anchorage, Alaska, and then moved to Memphis shortly after that. But my dad was in the service, and I have no relationship to Alaska. That's just where I was born. But my family roots are Memphis, Tennessee, and then we lived in Sacramento as a kid. I went to high school there. And then later went to San Luis Obispo, and then later Los Angeles, where I went to Cal Arts and studied with Charlie Hayden and James Newton, composition with him.
You were also part of what was known as the Young Lion Jazz Movement in mm-hmm. L.A., and were part of the whole New York Columbia record scene, and mm-hmm. ultimately settled here. I mean, mm-hmm. why did you park yourself here? Why here?
Well, I was with a band for 6 years in Los Angeles called Black Note, and we did pretty well. But after about 6 years, we went our separate ways. Some of the cats went to New York. I wasn't quite ready to go to New York. And coming up to San Francisco, I had always liked it up here. I've always liked the life outside of music, the politics, the way people live, the consciousness. And, of course, I like the art here, too. And there just seemed to be an extension outside of music, theater, dance, possibilities of collaboration. And I felt like this would be a good place to grow, a good place to connect with people, and certainly a good place that matched my political spirit. So that was the impulse to come here in 96, and this has become my home. I don't want to go any other place. This is where I have found that sort of simpatico with a city. And now that I have kids here, this is definitely a place that I call home.
And speaking about your politics, you did something called Brown Dreams a while back, which is really about immigrants, a recruiter mm-hmm. for the Iraq War. I mean, pretty strong statement in terms of where the music came from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, you know, I walk into these projects sometimes with a clean slate and very open-minded, and working with different artists that may bring ideas. This was based on a poem by a great local poet by the name of Paul Flores, who was very concerned in this issue and taught me about this issue. And so these projects are all about learning about self, learning about geography, learning about history, learning about how ways that you can make a personal statement to make the future better. So that was an example of that. That would have been in 2004, maybe, right? 2003, right after the Iraq War started.
Well, let's hear another cut from your work. This is actually your orchestra, and there's a vocal on it by Faye Carroll. Danny, it's cut number 7. This is Soul of the Movement, and Soul of the Movement is all about Martin Luther King.
I heard through the grapevine to boycott the bus line, and so in the meantime, black cabs will do me just fine. If you need to get to your school in the boondocks, pass the bus stop and grab a black cab. Black cab.
That's from Soul of the Movement, Black Cab. Tell us about this song, the Black Cab. I mean, the story behind it.
Yeah. Well, I had an opportunity to go down south when I was learning about the civil rights movement. Although my family was there, I've lived most of my life on the West Coast. And so part of that journey was to go to Montgomery and learn about the movement there that happened in 1955 and 56 with Rosa Parks and the beginning of Dr. Martin Luther King leading this movement. And walking around, going to the memorials, going to some of the museums and learning about how the people mobilized themselves and boycotted the buses and then took black cabs, black cab drivers, where they took them to work, took them to school, took them to church. And for over a year, they broke the will of the bus company there, and they had to actually desegregate the bus lines. And so this song really is about the spirit of the great people of Montgomery and how they came together. And like with Duke Ellington, you try to use the blues and tell that story when you're talking about swing and blues. And so this is really based on a simple blues form. Not a 12-bar blues, but certainly the sound of the blues and the way the construct of the blues, improvisation. And this actually features a great singer, Kenny Washington, who has been working with the Lincoln Center over the past couple years. He did Blood on the Fields with Paula West. I think that was like a year ago. And so this is a vocal that features him. He's also featured on our Harriet Tubman record. He's someone who can not only scat sing, but also deliver a really beautiful lyric.
You got the blues in your head all the time, pretty much, huh?
I think we all do, because the blues is just a form of communication. And
August Wilson told me he would never have written plays if it hadn't been for the blues, for example.
Oh, yeah. Duke Ellington wouldn't have written music if it wasn't for the blues.
Music, literature, I mean, it's all the arts. Let me invite listeners to join this discussion. Actually, if you have some thoughts about Duke Ellington or reflections about his music, or if you just want to talk about music and how it's turned into, how it comes from literature, how it comes from history, because that's certainly what Marcus Shelby's whole musical career has been all about, or talk about some jazz artists and blues artists that you have particular affinity with, we welcome your involvement in the program. In fact, let me give you the toll-free number and you can join us now. We'll also, in the course of the rest of this program, hear some more of Marcus Shelby's music. But we want to welcome you to the program. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Particularly like to hear from some Ellington lovers. Again, join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. Or if you've heard Marcus Shelby, if you've heard his music, you may want to comment on what that experience was like. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, and you can also join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And just to give you again a range of the work that we're talking about on Marcus Shelby, Port Chicago, Harriet Tubman, Soul of the Movement, all done as a result of deep research of African-American history. And on Friday, a 16-piece band, Marcus Shelby Orchestra, will celebrate the legacy of Duke Ellington, born 115 years ago this week, with a tribute at Zellerbach Hall at UC Berkeley. We're going out here with more from the Soul of the Movement. This is Trouble on the Bus. That's more of Trouble on the Bus. The Marcus Shelby Orchestra that comes from the Soul of the Movement, Meditations on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The inspiration was as a result of a personal journey. We were just talking off air about Emmett Till and the Tallahatchie Bridge and the personal journey that Roseanne Cash, who you heard that hour that I did with her had that led to. And also, you know, one of the great musical suites on Martin Luther King, along with yours, was Nina Simone's.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's someone who I admire, someone who I try to emulate because she used her music at a very, I mean, we're living in at a time where things, we've made some progress. We still need more progress.
You still got Donald Sterling.
We still have people reminding us that we have a long ways to go. But she did that at a time when it was really in the middle of it, and she was using her music much in a way that I would like to use it as using it as a personal statement for positive change and confronting the evils of racism at a time when it was really in her face. And so I admire her. She's someone that I try to expose to young people every time I get in front of them.
But Wynton Marsalis was really the musician that turned you around.
In many ways, because I saw him at a time when I was not playing music, and it inspired me to pick up my instrument.
Forgive me, you were going to be an electrical engineer.
I was going to be an electrical engineer. I thought that's what I wanted to be. I had no idea what that meant. But when I saw Wynton Marsalis, and not just him, but his entire band on stage, dressed in suits, him as being articulate, talking about this music in a way that really woke me up and really inspired me to do something like that, because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do in life. And I had played music. I played in church. I played in pickup bands. I played in college. But I didn't take it serious. I didn't know that you could take it serious. I didn't have anyone in my life that was doing that. So seeing Marsalis was the first step towards that, and having this vision. I didn't even understand the music he was playing. It was way above my head. And I certainly was not a good musician at that point. And I was nowhere near that. But I saw an image. And I saw something, a possibility.
That's for me, basically. That's that feeling. That's for me, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I was just talking recently to a producer of Thelonious Monk's work, and, you know, it was just, happened to be a white guy, but, you know, just hearing that music kind of turned him around, transformed him, mm-hmm. and suddenly he said, I got to produce this guy if I can possibly do that, and he did. Ben writes, we're going to go to some listener calls in just a moment, but he says, you're so positive. I'm wondering how you manage to keep so positive and creative, even when thinking of and dealing with issues such as children incarceration or Harriet Tubman's having to deal with terrible racism in the South?
Well, I'm positive because my ancestors that came before me, and we hear this all the time, that made it possible for you to do the things that you do. That's a real thing. I see it in action. And so my positivity stems from that because the people who I admire were positive. Harriet Tubman was positive. If she wasn't positive, she would have gave up. Dr. Martin Luther King was positive. If he wasn't positive, he would have gave up. Even people like Malcolm X, they had a positive agenda. Okay, their agenda wasn't negative. Their agenda wasn't about destruction. Their agenda was about fairness and equality. And that's a positive agenda. And so these people that I admire were positive. So I don't really know any other way. And that stems from my parents who were positive and the people who have come into my life have been that way. And many of these people have been really strong women, from my mother to my sister to my two daughters.
Was your grandfather a preacher?
My grandfather was a preacher. My grandmother was the bedrock of our family. But my grandfather preached at a dirt road West Memphis church. And that's where I first got introduced to music and the spirit. And I dare say the blues, although no one called it the blues in church. It was the blues, that feeling, that improvisational guttural instinct that came out of a long history of blues calls and work songs and field hollers, that I first heard that in church, not understanding that as a young child, but certainly being informed by it and being the foundation that has been with me ever since. So that came from my grandfather and his church. But all of this has been positive. I haven't had negative. Not that things don't happen bad. Everything.
Touch the wood here.
You know, well, I don't, you know, things will happen bad. But even when they do happen, I'm going to start from a place of positivity. I mean, I don't know how someone can get in front of kids and feel like a negative approach to things is a way to do it. So I have to kind of walk in with that sunny disposition.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have here in the studio. And
thank you.
We're going to go to some calls here. We'll also hear shortly some of the Harriet Tubman work mm-hmm. that you've done. But let's go to Oakland. And Wes, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, yeah, this is Dr. West with the Jazz and Democracy Project. I've been fortunate enough to have Marcus into my classes a number of times. And I just want to say, on the topic of Duke Ellington in particular, and on this International Jazz Day and all this type of stuff, I'm thinking about what kind of society would we have, or what type of government would we have if the government operated like Duke Ellington? and specifically, when I'm thinking about Duke Ellington in terms of how he would craft the perfect composition in which you, soloist, would shine. And so in that type of leadership, you have a leader who wants you to be the best that you can be and who wants you to be free. And I just think, these are the types of ideas that I talk about with my students and thinking about jazz as a metaphor for democracy, but I thought I would throw that out on right around Duke's birthday and International Jazz.
Well, you're making us think, Wes.
Hey, Wes. How you doing, Wes?
We thank Wes for the call.
Yeah. He's on to something. Wes is an educator that I know and I have worked with him over the last several years. And his whole approach, and I completely support this, is our music as this form of democracy where everybody's voice needs to be heard for it to reach its potential. And that's very important because this music that came out of our blues tradition, what we call jazz certainly uses that. But you can find that in other forms of music as well. But in this music, it is what makes it that everybody's voice is essential. And so in our democracy, that happens with the vote. On the bandstand, that happens with collaboration. That happens with support. That happens with call and response, improvisation, individual expression, and everybody really supporting each other for the greater cause. So that's what Wes is talking about. And that's something that I've seen him do in action in the classroom. And it's something that I believe in very strongly.
And let's bring Keith on next. Keith, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for the show. I was wondering if Mr. Shelby would talk a little bit about the transition period or what caused Duke Ellington to transition from the late 20s, early 30s with Bubba Miley, Ivy Anderson, that band to the later band in the 40s with Ella and Billy Strayhorn. That, just if you could talk about that period, it fascinates
me. Oh, yeah. That's a fascinating period. I have to say, out of all the five decades of Ellington, the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, I guess you can say the 60s, almost six decades. My favorite is actually the 30s. That was a prolific period for him. And that's actually when I believe he reached his international and national height of his popularity. Mind you, that was during the swing era, the mid-30s, what they call the swing era. And Duke Ellington coined the term. He wrote the song, "It Don't Mean a Thing Unless It Got," and if it ain't got that swing, which featured a vocal by Ivy Anderson. Now, in the 30s was also during the Depression. And you talking to a lot of the Ellington members, they were working so much that from what you read, see the effects of that. That was a really prolific time for Ellington. He was leaving the Cotton Club. He was at the Cotton Club from 1927 to 1931. 4 years of being recorded almost nightly on shortwave radio. So he had reached this national status. And at the same time, his band was evolving. Bubba Miley was actually, he had left the band in the early 30s because of, he had some problems and issues, and he eventually passed away. And so he was replaced by Cootie Williams. But at this time, Duke Ellington was moving from two trombones until eventually he had three. He had Tricky Sam Natten. He got a Puerto Rican trombonist by the name of Juan Tizol, who was also a great composer and arranger. He had Cootie Williams, who replaced Bubba Miley in the plunger department. Tricky Sam Natten. Johnny Hodges, now moving into the 30s. We're talking about members of his band now that were moving into 10 years being with Duke Ellington. Now, when we fast forward to the 40s, that's when he got three first-round draft choices, if you will. Billy Strayhorn in 1938, 1939. Ben Webster right around the same time. And then a great bass player by the name of Jimmy Blanton. Jimmy Blanton would probably go on to be the most influential bass player. And only being with Ellington for 2 to 3 years. He wasn't around very long because he passed away because of TB.
Is he one of your major influences?
He is the major influence because he was the first one. Ellington recognized early on through members in his band, they introduced him to Jimmy Blanton while they were on the road, all the gifts that he had, Jimmy Blanton. He was a wonderful, virtuosic soloist. He had a big, beautiful sound. He was doing things on the bass that musicians that were playing at the time just weren't doing. They didn't have the technical facility.
So what can you do with a bass that, I mean, in a sense that other instruments don't really offer?
What can you do?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what you're able to do when you're performing uh-huh. with that instrument as opposed to, let's say,
a trumpet or something like
Marsalis that. With a trumpet, yeah. Or whatever.
Oh, well, with the bass is wonderful because it is the heartbeat in the music. Now, in our music, swing and blues, it is just like the heart. It's, many times it's playing on every beat. It's that involuntary muscle that you hope that you don't have to pay attention to, that it's just going to do its job and regulate the time and regulate the rhythm and regulate the harmony. It's so important. That's why it sits right there in the center of the bandstand.
Now, I understand it's vital, but I'm also wondering, you know,
what can it do? Well,
about the flexibility of the instrument in terms of what it has to offer to the whole. You're talking about Ellington with that whole democratic picture of mm-hmm. everything working together and working
right.
in harmony.
Well, let me put it in context of his question, because before bass players were just playing basically a two-fill, boom, 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 boom. They weren't really doing the fluid bass lines that Jimmy Blanton brought to the table, walking bass lines. And he was doing the things that bass players melodically just didn't do. They didn't have the technical facility. Many places, times, you couldn't really hear them, but his sound was so big. It was so warm. I talk to musicians even today that remember that essence of him, like Jules Brassard, who's going to be performing with us on Friday. And they talk about these things, what they know about and what they've heard about his sound and how big it was and how flexible it was and how it changed the harmonic approach to the music. Because bass players before were just playing the root of the chord or the fifth of the chord or the chord tone, like the minor third or the third, as opposed to playing all the extensions or playing all these different iterations or being part of the melodic conversation that a saxophone naturally does or that a piano player naturally does. So that's what the bass, that's what Jimmy Blanton says, look, this is what can happen. And he was 21 years old, okay? He was only on a few records, but he influenced Ray Brown, Oscar Pettiford, Paul Chambers, Ron Carter, all the bass players that came after him with that sort of fluid concept. And so that was one big thing that changed Ellington's music in 1939, was having this bass player who can solo, this bass player who had this fluid style.
I like the way you described them as three draft choices.
It was at the same time. Three first round. And then there's Ben Webster. Ben Webster came along, and that was a game changer because you had saxophonists like Lester Young at the time.
That was great.
He was great. Yeah. But he had a totally different concept than Ben Webster. You had Coleman Hawkins. And so Ellington, up until that time point, did not have the big tenor soloist. Okay, and this was at a time when you had a big band, you had to have the big tenor soloist. He didn't have that. No one in his band was an expert at that. You had people like Johnny Hodges, who was the alto sound. You had Harry Carney, who was playing Barry saxophone. And you had Barney Bagard, who was playing clarinet. But you didn't have the tenor sound. So Ben Webster, that's another thing that elevated.
It's another world of difference.
Another world of difference. Yeah. And then I have to add, because you always hear that band from 1939 to the early 40s, the War Years, as you only hear it about as the Webster Blanton Band. But Strayhorn brought an incredible amount of musicality, composition, arrangements. He did all the vocal arrangements.
He's a brilliant musician.
And he did many, then he began to write original music. So that is the difference between the 40s band in the 30s band.
You've outlined it very well for us, and I want to mention again, just to give another plug here, that as part of the Cal Performances, Marcus Shelby's orchestra will be doing the Legacy of Duke Ellington, 50 Years of Swing at Zellerbach Hall this Friday, May 2nd at 8 p.m., and on we go to another caller, and that's you, Dan. Hi.
Oh, hi. Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. I don't have a question, more just a comment. That is that for a number of years I lived in a little house off Presidio Park in San Francisco, and we used to open up the doors of the backyard when it was hot, like today, and we'd have this wonderful music blast in from the neighbor next door, and I thought, who is this guy playing loud music? Turns out it's Mr. Marcus Shelby, so I just have to say, hey, thanks for free education. Thanks for providing an amazing soundtrack to my hot Sunday afternoons for a number of years.
I think it's great also that you felt that way about it. You know what happened with Spike Jonze recently? His neighbors were complaining. He said it was because they were white people. They didn't understand, you know.
You mean
complaining
Spike Lee
about
or
the music. Spike Jonze.
Oh, Spike Jonze.
Spike Lee. I'm
Spike
sorry.
Lee.
Spike Lee, yeah. Spike Jonze is a white filmmaker. Spike Lee was apparently upset about this and said, this is because they're white people. They don't understand. My father was a jazz musician. He used to play all the time in Harlem. Nobody was bothered
I
by
read
it.
That, yeah.
Anyway, thank you for the call, Dean.
Yeah, thank
Dan,
you.
Dan, excuse me. Good to hear from you. And again, let me give some plugs for Marcus Shelby. The Freedom Jazz Choir, Marcus Shelby and the Freedom Jazz Choir, will be playing at the Community Baptist Church in Santa Rosa on Saturday, May 11th, and on week later after that in Santa Rosa again. May 18th, Marcus Shelby and the Freedom Jazz Choir will be at the Glazer Center in Santa Rosa. And you'll be playing the Tubman Suite there, so maybe I thought we could hear a little bit of that before we move along here.
Okay. And actually, let me correct the date. It's May 18th. Is the Community Baptist Church. That's a Saturday, I believe, right? May 18th?
Okay, I have 11th.
Yeah, that might,
that's the 18th.
Yeah.
Okay, so when is the Glazer Center? Is that?
Yeah, the Glazer Center. And we're doing the Harriet Tubman Suite, which
we're hearing now.
And we haven't performed it since we premiered it, so that's what's exciting. And we're going to have a 100-piece choir supporting us on that.
This is the prelude.
Yeah.
Read some of your comments here. Laura and John write, we have been longtime fans of Marcus Shelby and Duke Ellington and just want to express our deep gratitude to him for his wonderful contribution to jazz and to the Bay Area music scene. It is exciting to have such a preeminent musician who is forging new paths in music right here in our neighborhood. And thank you also for the education you bring to your listeners, both through your playing and through your lectures.
Oh, thank you.
Tricia writes, wondering about mentors for my daughter who has raw talent, but due to attentional and time management challenges, has trouble staying on track to develop her vocal skills. Any jazz mentors available for young adults?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, you know, I would put it in this context. There is a lot of support out there. And let me just name a couple of programs that I'm currently involved in, and there's more, but the Community Music Center, I teach there every Tuesday, 4:30 to 6:30. We have a young teenage big band. And we don't turn anybody away. And we've been doing this for about a year now. And, you know, the youngest kid is 4 years old. Well, they're 4 years old. That's my daughter. And the oldest kid is about 17, 18. And we talk history. We talk music. That's one thing. There's also a wonderful organization called Living Jazz. And they offer camps for young people in the summer. I teach at one of those youth camps. Go to their website. They have programming throughout the year. So there are these support forces. San Francisco Jazz Festival has a whole family matinee series and an in-school program. I've been a part of that for many years.
There's a lot of wonderful stuff.
There's a lot of stuff out there, yeah.
Of course, the only thing is if people can afford to continue living here.
A lot of these things are free, a lot of these programs. But I know you're talking about living here.
About the musicians.
That's a whole other conversation.
That's a whole
that we're trying to tackle on the San Francisco Arts Commission right now, I can tell you that.
Did you know Herb Wong, the jazz journalist?
I did. I was friends with him.
He just died earlier.
Yeah, I know. I knew him quite well.
He founded the jazz program at Berklee Schools.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, he took Duke Ellington up there in 1969 when Duke Ellington was in the Bay Area. I think he might have been working on one of his sacred suites. But Herb Wong asked Duke Ellington to come over to Berkeley High and meet the students, and Duke Ellington did, and it was a big thing. They took pictures of this, and Herb Wong was, because he was teaching at one of the high schools at the time. I'm not sure what the name of the high school was, but I knew him well. He actually produced one of the last records that I played on before he passed away, and so this was a big loss to our community.
Can I also say how gracious you've been in terms of extending yourself to young people and being an educator to them? I mean, you're following in the path of Duke Ellington along that line as well.
Thank you.
And here's a real challenging question.
Uh-huh.
Karen says, I want to like jazz and blues, but I think of myself as an average music listener and I struggle to understand the art form. Tell me what I should listen to for in the music and how I can understand the power and beauty you see in it.
That is a very, very good question. The first thing I would suggest is let's lose the label. You know, a lot of times we say jazz and we have this preconception and notion of what that is. And we can find something in this music that speaks to all of us, whether it's a beautiful ballad, or whether it's something fast and urgent, or if it's something chaotic, or if something completely tonal. One other thing I would suggest, just listen to Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. I have yet to meet someone who can't relate to that record, or at least like that record.
Splendid suggestion.
That's a start.
Yeah, that's a great start. In fact, did you also know Grover Sales? You must have known Grover.
From Count Basie. Yeah, I didn't know him personally, no.
He also taught in the taught jazz in a number of places throughout. But he used to say, you have to listen underneath the music. You have to listen below the music. I mean, in terms of what it is.
All around the music, because the music, it's like a meal. You can either just say food, or you can describe it and all the things that make it delicious, from its spices to its ingredients to the smell to the way it looks. And music is like, it's not just sound, but you have instruments involved, you have dynamics, you have things like call and response, you have chords, you have all the beautiful melodic, harmonic, and rhythmic elements. And once people get closer to what is actually coming at them, like the smell of food, and break that down, then they can find the things in the music that are profound, like how the voices talk to each other and why they talk to each other and when they talk to each other.
By the voices, you mean the instruments,
the instrumentation,
of course. Yeah, yeah.
Because every instrument is a voice.
But use all your senses as well.
All your senses. Yeah. And this thing that we call jazz is just organized in a way that moves in the moment. It's a dynamic form that, when repeated, does something totally different.
Here's something I think you'll love. This is on our Facebook page. Uh-huh. Neil writes, I cannot overstate the pleasure I find in Marcus Shelby's music, presence, and disposition. I draw a straight line from the music and composition of Duke Ellington, Billy Strayhorn, to that of Marcus Shelby.
Oh.
Let me go to another caller here, and we bring
you
on Tony from Pinole. Good morning.
Hey, Marcus. This is Tony Gutierrez. You probably remember me back from back in the Santa Barbara days when you used to play the jazz hall with Rita.
Oh, my goodness. You're aging me now, my man.
Oh, no. I've been following your career since. Hey, you know, I just noticed that Black Note has a new release for 2014 on the Red Cross label. I wanted to know if you had anything to do with that project.
You know what? I think that's another group called Black Note, actually, because no, we haven't done anything since 1996. And I know all the former members that are in the band, but I did notice there was another band out there called Black Note. So that's another band.
You
that's
get
not
it
us.
Patented.
I was hoping for a reunion because I remember these real well.
Oh, well, I wish. You know, I talked to Willie Jones III. He's who's doing amazing work in New York. Every now and then, our saxophone player at that time, he just moved back from Japan after being in Japan for 15 years. But at this point, that's not in the works. Gilbert Castellanos, he's a great trumpet player. He's living down in San Diego. We've done some gigs, but Black Note as a band has not happened yet, and life has gone on. But it's good to hear from you. I go down to Santa Barbara every now and then, but I remember the Jazz Hall, and that was a great place.
And Tony, thank you for your call, and we'll bring another caller up in Hillsburg on. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling because... Oops, sorry, I lost you there. I'm calling to join the Marcus Shelby Fan Club because Marcus has done extraordinary work as an educator in Hillsburg.
And I really wanted to thank him for that. He's worked closely with the Healdsburg Jazz Festival and all sorts of different things, particularly the Healdsburg Freedom Jazz Bar, of which I'm a member for the past 2 years. And
hey,
really
Patrick.
Want to thank... Hello, Marcus. And I really want to thank you because what you've done as an educator has been to completely transform the city of Healdsburg in many ways through the Black History Month program. It's extraordinary how a whole collection of large Hispanic population as well as some very privileged Caucasian kids have now embraced jazz and learned about Black history, and I really wanted to thank you for that.
Well, good
thank
of you,
you
to
Patrick,
call, Patrick,
man.
And since he's calling up in Healdsburg, let me give the plugs and get them right here. May 17th at the Community Baptist Church, May 24th at the Glazer Center in Santa Rosa, near enough to Healdsburg. And we're going to go out here with Black Suffrage Blues or Freedom Trail. And this is, again, from the Harriet Tubman, which you will be performing again.
Yeah, and for the Healdsburg Jazz Festival on June 5th. But just went, because they're the ones who actually are supporting that project. But thank you so much.
And another plug for the Cal Performance, which is putting on the Zellerbach event this Friday night. Tribute to Duke Ellington. Thank you so much, Marcus Shelby.
Thank you so much for having me. Have
great
a great day.
You.
Thank you.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.